thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of the Stripe Show podcast. It is Froggy Wednesdays, and you know, every single week we get a tour player on to talk about what's going on in the PGA Tour, what's going on in their career, and we're coming down really to the best part of the season. We've got one final week, the final week of the regular season, and then we'll get into the playoffs. And this is really going to be a crazy week this week. People trying to jockey for position. The higher up you are, the better off you are heading into the Northern Trust. And this week, we're joined by a guy that I feel it's destiny he wins this event. It's going to be the Wyndham Championship, and we're joined by Wyndham Clark. Wyndham, thanks so much for your time, man.
Hey, what's up, man? Yeah, thanks for having me on. I agree with you. I'm destined to win this thing.
Yeah, you got to win this. I mean, they don't even have to do anything. Your name's already on the trophy.
It would be the easiest thing ever. I'd actually save them some money. They don't have to etch it in there.
Have you played this event before?
Yeah, so I actually played this course, Sedgefield, in junior golf. So they had the FootJoy Invitational growing up. I played it like two or three times. And then this is now my third time as a pro playing it.
Do you like the golf course? Does it fit what you like to do as a player?
Yes and no. Like, there's a lot that I do like about it. The greens are fantastic. Some of the better greens we play on tour. It is definitely kind of a target golf course. So distance doesn't really, there's really no distance bias. So basically everyone's hitting into the same spots, and it's basically who can hit their short to mid irons well and who makes the most putts. So, I mean, I haven't had the most success here, but I think, you know, I feel like with my game, I can play anywhere. So it's just a matter of my game's there this week.
Yeah, this is a golf course. Kind of reminds me a little bit of not necessarily by design, but by distance, reminds me a little bit of Harbortown.
Yeah,
where it brings in guys who don't bomb it, the bomb and gouge guys, which you are one of the longest hitters on tour. Some people may not know right now, currently fourth on the PGA Tour in driving distance. But you're saying that being a long hitter on this course does not exactly play to your favor.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think distance always plays to my favor, obviously, at any golf course. When I'm hitting a 9-iron in versus a guy hitting an 8 or 7-iron, that's obviously. Right. But as far as me being able to cover bunkers and have wedges in when guys have to have 9-iron or 8-iron in, there's really none of that. I can only think of maybe one, maybe two holes out here that I can actually cover bunkers that maybe other guys can't, and it's an advantage. But other than that, you pretty much hit it, you know, anywhere from 250 to 280 off almost every tee. So there's really no, it's similar to, like you said, Harbortown. It's everyone's from the same spot.
Now, will you be hitting some irons off tees or most of the par four still driver options?
You know, I'll probably hit, I think we're going to hit, I might only hit four drivers this week. I'll probably hit three or four three woods. And then the rest would be like a three or four iron. So yeah, I'm going to be hitting a lot of irons and three woods. So it's definitely a different week than, you know, most weeks out here.
Now, here we are on a Wednesday. You're saying that's your game plan is tomorrow when you tee off, you're going to hit four drivers. Let's say you come down to Sunday and you're in the hunt. Does that game plan change at all? Or is that something that no matter what you will stick to? Hey, we've been hitting iron off this tee all week.
I'm a pretty big game plan guy. Yeah. So whatever, especially on a Sunday when things are a little bit tighter, I think, you know, if we're always hitting that club, you just feel comfortable with it, then I'll do that. But also there is a little bit, you know, changing things up on the fly. If you're hitting a great, you know, if I'm hitting driver and I feel awesome, I mean, I also can just go and route the course, and there's certain holes I can take driver and just, you know, overpower it.
Right.
And, you know, you might do that, but typically I stick to my game plan and just hope that, you know, it's a great game plan. And if it got me into contention, then it's probably a good one. And we just want to stick with it.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we saw Cameron Champ had a lead, got on 18. And, you know, the announcers always have their own way of seeing things, and they're not always right. But they were very critical of Cameron hitting that driver because he did pull it left and ended up having to lay up twice to get there. And he hit an amazing wedge shot, tapped in, and won the golf tournament. But they thought it would have been smarter to not hit driver on that hole, but he had hit driver all week. So is that, would you change that scenario? Yeah. Would you ever club down?
So I'm torn in certain situations. So we were actually talking about Van Rooyen's situation last week. Cause I actually just played some holes
Barracuda
today. Yeah. The Barracuda, he hit a left off the tee box, and he had a 3-point lead. So similar to Cameron, where he had a 2-shot lead. I would play the statistics there. So yes, normally I would be hitting driver, but when you have that kind of lead, like especially on 18 that at both courses, if I hit an iron off the tee, it gets rid of all the trouble, and the worst you're going to make is bogey. So I do play to my game plan a lot, but there are certain circumstances. So for instance, here, 18 at Sedgefield, you know, I have a 2-shot lead and I've been hitting driver or 3-wood all week. You know, shoot, I might, and if the guys are in the clubhouse, I might just hit a 3 or 4 iron, get it in play, maybe just lay up short of the green or to the front of the green and get up and down. If I don't, I make bogey, I win the tournament by one. So,
right.
You know, I'm kind of a statistics guy when it comes to that. So, you know, it worked out for both those guys, but it also could go the other way. So,
yeah, I mean, I think one of the more famous times we've seen in recent memory is 2019 at the Masters. Tiger got on 18 and only needed to make bogey there to win. He had a 2-shot lead standing on that tee. So what did he do? He laid up and hit short, chipped on the green, 2-putted, walked out of there with a bogey and won the Masters. So sometimes you're better off to change your plan when you all you need. But then I've heard guys say, I don't want to play for bogey. I'm just going to play the way we've played it all.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up. That's the best example. Tiger Woods is the best in our game. And if the best to ever play our game is doing that, then I think that's probably a great strategy. He's always been play whatever he feels like or hit whatever he feels like he could get into play. And, you know, I mean, he's the best iron player and he's the best in so many different categories. So I think that is a prudent play. But I can see it both ways. I think it's all depending on the person. I just think, if one of those guys did set up on that hole and then actually made the double and went to a playoff and lost, they'd be kicking themselves. Like, why didn't I just hit 4 iron right. or 3 iron off the tee and I could have won the tournament that way.
Right. So, that makes sense. So this week headed into the Wyndham, you're 79th in the FedEx Cup, which puts you very comfortably into the first playoff event at 125. And you would need to play well to get into the BMW. Do you know, going into this week, is your goal to just try and move up some spots to get yourself comfortably into week number two?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's unfortunate. I've had kind of a tough summer, really ever since about Mirrorfield. I haven't played my best golf. I played awesome golf in the fall and then leading up all the way till Mirrorfield, I made a lot of cuts. I was hitting it good. I just wasn't getting a lot out of them, out of my rounds and tournaments. So coming into this week, it's more of I just want to build momentum. Obviously, going into next week, hopefully into more weeks after that, but also into the fall. So I'm looking also big picture. I want to kind of gain momentum as I'm moving into the fall season, because like you said, I'm set. I'm keeping my card. Everything's good.
Right.
Ideally, yes, I'd love to have a great week this week. Try to move back into the top 70, so that if I make the cut next week and have a decent week, I set myself up to make it to the BMW and then hopefully from there try to get on a run. So my caddy and I, we set our playoff starts here. And so this is kind of my first playoff week and hoping that I can reel off some great rounds and make a deep run.
I mean, it's a strong field this week at the Wyndham. We're seeing a lot of guys. I know that Patrick Reed had withdrawn from the tournament. He was trying to get as many points as he could to try to get on the Ryder Cup team. And I'm not sure if I saw somebody online say maybe he got a phone call that said, hey, you know what? You don't really need to play so many events. Maybe you take some time off because he's going to get maybe one of those captain's picks. Or
something. Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't hear that. So, but yeah, it is a good field.
Yeah, it's a very good field this week. Do you like playing in a stronger field event like this? Does it make you feel better to, hey, I'm gauging my game against the best there are?
Yeah, I always like playing whenever there's a good field because, you know, one, obviously that improves the world ranking points. So the better you play, the, you know, higher up you move in the world rankings. And, but also it's just, you know, I want to play where the best are playing and play against the best. And, you know, when there's weaker fields, it's not that I don't really think of it that way, but it definitely is nice when it is a big field. You kind of, I don't know, it gets me extra focused.
Right. Now, next week when you're at the Northern Trust and you know where you stand in the FedEx Cup points and you're coming down the stretch, are you, or maybe you have your caddy scoreboard watching and say, hey, I know we need to finish here. This is where we are to try to get into next week. Is that something you're monitoring, or do you just go out there and play your best golf and just let the cards fall where they may?
Yeah. You know, we were in a similar position my rookie year. I made it in. I was like, I want to say I was like 1/10th or 1/15th going into Northern Trust my rookie year. I ended up making it to BMW and I finished like, I don't know, top 20 or top 15, whatever it was, and made it to the BMW. And he was definitely monitoring that. I wasn't as much. He would just basically, there were some times I remember, on the back nine where he's like, hey, I think it's smart if we just hit this shot here on this hole versus something maybe we've done throughout the week. Cause he's like, hey, we just need more looks and we need a lot of greens. We do not need to do, so he was kind of monitoring that. Honestly, I've kept my card. I'm in a great spot.
Right.
I'm going to really go out there and just swing for the fences. And I want to try to win tournaments. So I'm not going to really try to, I need to go finish 15th or better. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try to win a tournament. And if that results in me doing well and making it to the BMW or the Tour Championship, great. And if not, then I have next season. So right. I'm kind of looking at it more from that standpoint. Now that it's my third year, I kind of want to go out there and I want to get a win, or I just want to be in contention. That feeling being in contention is the best. I mean, those nerves and, the people watching and just everything, you just get so zoned in and you kind of get addicted to that feeling. And it's been a while. It's been 3-4 months since I've even been close to contention. So I kind of want to get back into contention. That's really one of my goals these next few weeks, is just to have a chance come the back nine on Sunday.
Maybe you can speak to this, because I know you've got a second place finish this year and you've also got a T8 as well. How hard is it to win on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, it's funny, is the more and more I'm out here, it is really hard. I think there's guys that win that sometimes people are shocked, like, I can't believe that guy won, or guy had been playing terrible all year and then he wins when he's playing good. And then there's guys like, for instance, I mean, Sam Burns, sneaky, could be the player of the year. I mean, he's, I think, been in contention like 10 times this year. He's been in the final group so many times. He's only had one win. And that just shows you. I mean, I think he literally has been in the final group 7 or 8 times and only has one win. So it just goes to show it's very hard to win out here. And when guys win multiple times in a career or in a year, like, it's harder than I think people think it is. There's so many good golfers, and you out here, you can't go and shoot even par on a weekend and win anymore.
No,
you have to be under par, and you have to play just as good as you did the first 3 days. So it is very tough. I believe and know I'm going to win out here. It's just a matter of time. And, there's a lot to, when it's your week, it's your week. And I just haven't quite had that yet. So,
yeah, I mean, you see guys like Harris English. It took him a long time to get his first win, but then he's played really, really well this year. He's won twice, been in contention. We know what happened this past week, and Abraham Answer gets his first victory at the tournament you were at. Van Rooyen gets his first win. We're seeing a lot of guys get their first victories. But then at the same time, Harris this week, I'm not sure, and maybe you can speak to this, I'm not sure if I feel like Harris lost that tournament this week or if Abraham Answer went out and took it. And it feels more like the first because of the circumstances that happened around Harris.
Yeah, I didn't actually watch the tournament. I know he did make – he had a couple in the water or something on one of the holes. Obviously, it was a tough hole. I saw Siwoo made a big number. A bunch of guys botched that hole. But yeah, it's so hard. I mean, clearly the guy has won this year. So it's not like – it's not for lack of
talent,
having it factor or whatever right. It is. It's just that hard. I mean, at our level and with how many good players there are, if you do make mistakes, you're probably not going to win the tournament. So, like I said, I didn't really watch it, so I don't know exactly what happened. I am friends with Abe, and I'm glad he pulled that off. And, it's awesome seeing him get his first win. But yeah, I didn't watch it. So,
but as far as some of the things that happened were, I think on the sixth hole, Bryson needed a ruling and that kind of slowed them down. Then they were on the clock. Then they got a second warning. And I'm not sure how many warnings you get before they start taking strokes off. But have you ever been in a group that's been put on the clock?
Yeah. I got to be very careful here because I've played with some players and I played with Bryson, and especially I played with Bryson in the final group one time. And I'm not talking him specifically, but in general, I think it's very hard, especially in a final round when things are heightened and you're already kind of a little more anxious than maybe the other days. And every shot matters so much more. It is very tough, even though you try to not let it affect you, when you get put on the clock or when you get warned, even though you're about to win a tournament, and even if it ends up being a fine, it doesn't matter because you're about to win a tournament. It does kind of change a little bit. It affected me in one of the tournaments. I was with this player, and we got put on the clock. We were two holes behind, and I was leading the tournament after nine holes, going in the back nine on Sunday. And I just sped up just this much because I felt a little bit like it just happened. And next thing you know, I end up finishing. I got a top five out of it, but it was very frustrating because we were so far behind, and I felt like I had to rush to compensate for his slow play. And so it does make a difference. And I think it's unfortunate that someone can have that effect on you when you're playing. I'd like to think I'm mentally stronger than that. And obviously that's just something you got to get better at, but it is, I think it can be a very selfish thing when you are, there are only a handful of guys out here that are very slow, and it's, you know, we're all abiding by what the play, pace of play procedures are, and they're not. I think it's just kind of, I don't know. I don't want to say too much and get in trouble here.
Oh, no, I agree 100%. I understand 100%. Nor do I want you to. But when that scenario happens, can you say something to the person you're playing with, like, hey, you're slowing us down, how do we speed this up? Is there a way to do that, or you just have to worry about yourself?
Yeah, you know, I think that could lead to some discrepancies, because they're obviously in contention too. So, you know, I don't know, depending on the player.
Right. And your relationship with the player.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you could ruin a relationship if you kind of say, hey, man, if you said it in a really nice way, I don't think he could get too mad. And maybe after the round, he would apologize if he did. But at the same time, he could get on edge and then be like, you know, why are you coming at me like that? And then he hits a couple bad shots, and then next thing you know, he's cussing you out. So
right. And then he slows down even more because now he knows he's not going to win. And he's like, well, screw this guy, I'll slow down more.
100%. So it's a very tough situation. I think you just got to get, you know, if I was in that position again, I would really just, you know what, I'm just going to go as slow as him. I don't care if I get a penalty or not. It wouldn't be a shot penalty. I don't care if I get a fine. I'm just going to go at his pace. I'm going to go take extra bathroom breaks. I'm going to take as long as I want, looking at my yards book, whatever it is, and just slow everything down, because I typically play fast. And when you get with a slow player, especially in that situation, it is tough. I mean, it's definitely something I need to work on.
Yeah, Harris said they were running from green to tee in between holes. They were basically running to the tee.
Yeah, box. See, and that just pisses me off. It's not fair, because Harris is not a slow player by any means.
No,
by any means, and it's just unfortunate that happens. You know, I do understand taking your time, because we are playing for one, our job, and you know, it's a lot of money on the line, and there's, you know, you can go through the list of what it means. But when 90 some percent of the guys play to a certain speed, and there's only a small percentage that play to another speed, I just think, I wish the tour could do something to,
right,
you know, obviously penalty strokes is very severe, but in those situations, if it's clearly one player, it's like, hey, you're about to get a stroke penalty, you better pick it up. So
That's the only way it's going to get fixed. I mean, because I don't think slow play is a huge problem.
No.
However, when it affects the outcome of a tournament, then therefore it is a big problem.
1,000%, 100%. And like, for someone that, you know, is a top 20, 30 player in the world, if you find him 20, I hate to say this, but you find him 20 to $50,000 or $100,000 when he has a chance to win a million, he's like, whatever, okay, I'll take fine to win this.
Right.
Now you put a stroke penalty, I'm pretty sure he's going to go, oh, now that's real. And so whoever it is, I think then he'll play faster. And I think the rules official should come up to that person specifically, not the other guy.
Correct.
And say, hey, you know what? I know you're not – this should be procedure. They should go up to the guy that's playing normal speed and say, hey, I know you're playing – you know, you're playing good. It's the other guy. This is what we're going to do. You continue doing what you're doing. If he doesn't, this is what's going to happen. So don't worry about it. That is how they should handle it.
Because absolutely, then I think
that would have calmed down Harris. He probably wins the turn.
Do you think there's a reason they don't handle it that way?
Yeah, I think they're too, a stroke penalty. I mean, so let's put it, obviously that's some of the best players in the world, so it's not that big of a deal, but now let's put it in a situation like this, a guy here at the Wyndham that's trying to keep his card, keep for his, playing for his livelihood. And he's coming in this week at 145, and he is in third place, and he needs a third place or better to get his card. And then you come in and you add it, potentially he could get a stroke penalty. I think they're concerned that if they did give him a stroke penalty and it cost him from keeping his card or something like that, I think the backlash from that would be worse than the other way.
But I think that's how you fix it. I think that's how you would, I think if that happened a couple times, you would nip slow play very, very fast.
100%. And it should be something that they should start at the beginning of the year, not obviously, okay, let's start it this week. And so everyone knows it. Then that person that's in the situation I just explained, he would already know and know that that's all right. Well, that's going to happen if I do this. So I agree. I mean, unless you made the fines just astronomical, which also would be unfair because there's some good, there's some fast players that get on the clock because they're behind and then wind picks up and then they end up taking 2 minutes instead of the normal 30 seconds because they have to change clubs or whatever. So yeah, I really wish they could monitor better what happened prior to them getting the slow time. So
yeah, penalize the person that's causing the problem, not 100%. The group, because one guy in the group probably wants to play faster. He wants to get done. He's not trying to slow down, especially if you're a fast player. You can look over a period of time and see which guys are tend to be slower players and which guys tend to be, hey, let's hit the ball and move on.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I just thought this would be a great way to do it is, like, imagine – so we have all these volunteers out here, and you have a walking score, you have whatever. Well, what if they got an extra 50, 60, 70 volunteers and have them just be literally clocking people and create all this data of, okay, you know what? Wyndham plays, hits on average every shot at 42 seconds. And so they have this data. So then when a group gets on the clock, they look and go, okay, this guy normally play this and they're behind. So it can't be them. This other guy though plays on average a minute and 10 seconds every shot. So then they just know that ahead of time.
Yeah. We're a data driven sport. So let's get more data.
100%. I think that'd be a great way to do it. So then when a rules official comes up, he doesn't affect the two guys or the one guy that is playing. He more goes straight to the guy, says, hey, you know what? You guys are on the clock. It's because of you. You got to pick it up.
Let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter weighting designs, use of high density particles, and even a nano transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is their highest performance ball to date. And with their full suit of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill sets. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.
Yeah, I mean, some guys are slow play. It takes them forever to pull the trigger. And then other guys are slow play because it's just so much talking with the caddy and data and this and that and the other. And whatever it is, the result is still slow play. But you said that you've played with Bryson in the past. Have you witnessed the fan heckling problem that has become a problem with Bryson?
No, I have not.
You didn't?
Granted, this when I have played, I played with Bryson now probably two or three times. I'm trying to think the last time. I think a lot of this was maybe prior to.
I call it BB, before Brooks.
Yes, 100%. So all of it was before Brooks. Honestly, I mean, Bryson's definitely a fan favorite. There's people that come out and they're yelling, go Bryson and all this stuff. So I've never seen the heckling. You know, my thought to that is, I played other sports, so have to me, I think have thicker skin. And I mean, every other sport, you don't think Kobe went into a gym and they were screaming all different things, or you don't think Aaron Rodgers goes into playing the Vikings and they're yelling stuff. I mean, I get it. It's golf, but with the fact that we have fans and they're allowed to make noise, it's bound to happen. So now if it's in his backswing, that's
wrong. Absolutely. That's wrong.
That's
throw them out. Yep, there's no place for that.
Yeah, no place for that. But if it's in between shots or walking down the fairway, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's yelled at us. You just got to not hear it and keep going. And whatever. So I'm not in his position. I don't have people heckling me, but so I guess I'm not the best person to ask, right. But I have not experienced it. No.
Right. You are fourth in driving distance, as I mentioned earlier, on the tour for the entire season. And I mean, that's incredible being fourth. Is that something that you've always been a long hitter, or is that something that you've kind of built up to recently? Has just become so big?
I've kind of always hit it pretty far. Even in college, I was definitely one of the longer guys on my team. And then, you know, my senior year, I was definitely one of the longer guys in college golf. And then I got out here, and in college, I mean, guys are hitting it so much farther in college than they do in the pros. And
really?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'd say on my college golf teams, almost everybody was between 170, you know, 77 to like 185 ball speed, all of them. So I think – but what happens is I think – and that's a new wave. I'm telling you, you watch in the next 5 to 8 years of all the new college kids coming up, 180 will roughly be not quite the norm, but that'll just be like, oh, okay, he's 180. I just think the sport's getting so much more athletic, guys in college, the distance thing. I think everyone's kind of doing it. But yeah, when I got out here, I couldn't believe everyone was just gawking at how far I hit the ball. And I was like, oh, this is just normal. But what did happen is I made a little bit of and I think this is what a lot of college players do, is you tone it back. So when we play college tournaments, fairways are 40 yards wide. There's no rough. You can just literally send it. You hit it in the rough, bad angle. You can hit it to 15 feet and still make birdie. Out here, fairways are 20 yards, 25 yards wide. Rough is really thick. Greens are super firm. Pins are tucked 3 paces instead of 6 paces in college. And you can't get at those flags. And so I think it's a lot of players. I did this. I was, you know, mid-180s, and then I came out here. And after my first year into my second year, I was like 78 to 82 because I was trying to tone it back to just get it in play. Then as my game evolved and my swing has evolved and I've gotten better off the tee and my accuracy and everything, now I've ramped it back up a little bit. But yeah, I've kind of always had distance, and it's definitely, I think, for me, a huge competitive advantage at most courses when I can fly something 310, 315, and other guys have to lay up short and I have a sand wedge in and they have 8 iron. So it's definitely a huge advantage. It's one of my keys to my success for sure.
Are you happy with where you're hitting the ball now, or are you always trying to gain a little more distance when you and Boyd are working together?
Yeah. So Boyd, my coach, we, at the end of the fall, I was in a great spot. I was like, I don't know, 15th on the money list after the fall. And I was secured my card. I already had whatever points, like that's going to secure a card. And I was like, hey, we're hitting, my swing feels good. Let's maybe try some. I'm working out really hard in the gym. Let's try to gain some distance. And I was probably in the fall, and which I'm roughly the same now, as I was averaging probably 84 to 87, basically every just driver. I was like, let's try to get some. Let's see if we can train to get up in the 90s. Well, we did 2 days of it, and I was like 88 to 90 on my pretty fast ones. Then we got a couple over to 90, and then next, you know, about 4 days later, I couldn't hit a 7 iron where I wanted, and I'm spraying the ball left and right, and I kind of got frustrated. And then Boyd and I backtracked. We said, you know, hitting at 85, 185 is pretty darn fast, and that's good. Let's just, for me, it's more important to hit it in play. I think Bryson, with, you know, to give him credit, his swing is so fundamentally sound, and he's, prior to him hitting it far, he was one of the most accurate players on tour. I think he can continue to push the limits because of how he swings the golf club. He's always hit it so flipping straight that if he just continues to hit, you know, swing the same way, it's great. For me, my levels start changing. So my head dips down, I start compensating, and then it feeds into my iron play and wedges. And then I can't find the golf course. So I'm probably going to approach it a different route of more in the gym than I am going to do swing stuff. If I can get faster and stronger and continue to get more mobile in the gym, I'm hoping that, you know, my average 185 sneaks up to 188 just by me working out and being physically fit and whatever. And if not, then That's fine. I think.
Yeah, 185 is still fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I think 185 for the next 10, 15 years is still going to be fast. And I still think I'll be one of the longest players. So I'm more focused on trying to hit more greens and hit it closer.
You know, as much as I enjoy watching you on the golf course and watching golf, your social media feed is a lot of fun in that it's not just golf. Wyndham Clark does a lot of other things and you have a lot of fun. And I think that that's something that everybody in America could stand right now is in, we all seem to be focused so hard on our livelihood and working and working and working that we're not playing enough. You like to get out and play. You like to go fishing. You like to go hunting. Is that your, that's your release off the golf course?
Yeah. So just the way the schedule worked out, if you looked at the whole year, I actually played 10 out of 11 weeks. I mean, that's an absolute grind. I never suggest to anyone to ever do that. I was playing really good golf and I was hitting it good. And I was like, you know, I like these courses. Then I got into the PGA, then I got into the US Open. And it just, next thing you know, it was a 10 out of 11 weeks. And because we played so many and my card was locked up, I was like, you know, I need a little break. And so I kind of set up my summer that way to where I had 5 or 6 weeks off this summer. And I'm like, I live in Scottsdale. It's 100 and whatever degrees. What are you going to do? And so I set up some trips. And next thing you know, I find myself at the Celebrity Pro-Am in Tahoe.
That looked like fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. I mean, I haven't been a spectator for a golf tournament in so many years. And next thing you know, I'm there and I was outside the ropes. I'm like, this is kind of weird.
Now, did you want to jump in the ropes and hit a shot? It had you had to get that itch at least once.
I did a little bit. I hit a few shots. We didn't post any of them, but I did hit a few shots. But it was fun just because I'm hanging out with the guys and I'm inside the ropes. And like, now I'm in their position where they're watching, you know, they're usually watching me. And so I was watching them and it was just more of a fun thing. I was casual with friends, had a few pops drinking and it was great. Then I went from there to, this was an all world week, by the way. I went from Vail for 4th of July to then the Celebrity Pro-Am in Tahoe. Right. To then flew up with some buddies to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Wow. And fished for a day. And then the next day we flew to Vegas for the McGregor Poirier fight.
Wow.
And that literally was, none of that was planned.
It sounds like The Hangover.
Oh, it was. Oh, I needed a detox for sure. But we literally went from, we just planned on going to Celebrity Pro-Am. And then that turned into Jackson Hole, which turned into the fight. And it was the best trip that was never planned. And then went and played a tournament. Then the following week, I went to Alaska. So
where'd you go in Alaska?
King Salmon. I went just fishing for 7 days straight. It was the most unreal trip. We saw 70, 80 grizzly bear, caught hundreds and hundreds of fish. And it was an all world best trip of my life kind of thing. And so, yeah, it is by design. I try to have outlets. We play and travel so much out here. And I don't think a lot of people understand or appreciate how much of a grind that can be. Yes, we play golf for a living. We travel great places, and it's very lavish, and it's nice compared to, let's say, being working your normal 9-to-5 job. I get that, but there's also, I mean, you're away from your home 3-4 weeks in a row. You're sleeping in hotel rooms. You're traveling all the time. You're grinding out in the sun day in and day out. So when you do get some time off, it's kind of nice to have a release. And for me, that's kind of traveling, doing fun things, and then also fishing. So fishing is my biggest release. So I love to fly fish, and I've had a great summer fly fishing, and now I need to zone back in and start playing some golf and play some good golf.
No, but it's good to see that you place the importance upon taking some Wyndham time, like taking time to yourself, get out, do what you love to do. You can stand on a driving range and grind all day long, but you've got to have some time to get away from and put the clubs away and just go have some you time.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, and it's fun too with, you know, some of the positive social media is I can go and show a bunch of, you know, these fun trips and posting some of that stuff. Some of it I can't post. I wish I could. I might lose some sponsors by posting it, but, you know, it's...
You might gain a few too, though. You never know.
Yeah, that's very true. But it's, so it's a really fun gig. I love what I do, and I definitely enjoy my off weeks. That's for sure.
And that's a good thing. That's what makes it all worth it. You know, you work hard and play harder.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were at Oak State, we had your college teammate, Taylor Gooch, on the podcast a few weeks ago. Super nice dude. And he said that you guys had a really good time at Oak State. I mean, that, that has been a factory of PGA Tour players.
Yeah, actually, I think I saw a stat. We have maybe like 14 or 15 out here right now that are current PGA Tour players, and it is, I mean, it's perennially the best school for golf. And, you know, obviously in the recent years, you have guys like Wolf and Victor just coming out and having tons of success. Right. It's great. I mean, Taylor and I had so much fun together. We competed a ton. We're really good friends off the golf course too. And,
Even though he stood you up at the team event this year, we won't get into that though.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, it worked out well because they missed the cut. We finished whatever and had a better finish than them. So, you know, I'll always hold Taylor. I'll hold that on him, but we're still buddies and, you know, it won't affect our relationship.
Now you transferred to Oregon and played some as well too, right?
Just 1 year. Yeah. I was just 1 year, played for Casey Martin. It was actually my best year. As a college player, I was Pac-12 player of the year, and then we lost in the finals for nationals, and it was a great year. And so it's funny, as I'm equally a Cowboy as I am a Duck. And, you know, obviously I spent more time and I have maybe some more ties to Oklahoma State, but, you know, I love both schools.
All right, now playing on the tour, and obviously you went to two schools that are very big in football. I'm a huge college football fan as well. I'm an SEC guy.
Oh, there you go.
So there's a lot of your Georgia Bulldogs on tour.
Yeah, tons.
And I'm a big Gator fan. So we're definitely tuned in on the weekends to college football. When you're playing on tour, is there any checking the scores? You have your caddy checking the scores at all of your teams?
Oh, 100%. We're actually going so this is in between tour championship and our first win. Week in Napa, I think.
Okay.
The Oregon plays Ohio State, our second game of the year.
Yeah.
So we're going down, me and some friends and my caddy who went to University of Oregon, we're all flying down to watch the Duck game. And then Bo Hogue went to Ohio State. We got a little wager on the game. He's going to be there too. And then later in the year, I'm going to go to an OSU game, Oklahoma State game. So I'm very in tuned with the football. If it's a big game, 100%. We'll be walking, you know, don't get me in trouble, but my caddy will be walking down the fairway. He'll lift up the yardage book, has the phone in there.
Right.
He'll say, hey, we're up 28-10. I go, good news. All right, let's keep going. So we definitely look at the scores, and I'm a huge, huge football fan.
Yeah, I am too. I love the Gators, and I'm a huge Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan as well. So it was.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back to a game and to see live college football. Can't wait. Yeah,
it was my son and I attended the Super Bowl this year and watched Brady win his seventh ring with the Bucs, and it was.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It was the most unbelievable night. I tell people, I still don't believe the Bucs won the Super Bowl, and I still don't believe that Tom Brady's our quarterback. But I know both are real. But it just seems too good to be true.
Yeah,
it really is unreal. Speaking of the U.S. Open, as we were talking about earlier, you playing in majors, you qualified for the U.S. Open. How difficult? Because I don't think that was your first U.S. Open qualifier, correct?
Yeah, no, that was my first U.S. Open, but not my first qualifier. I started doing, this might be early or young, I'd say, for most kids, but my dad at 13 or 14 signed me up for a U.S. Open local, and I think I was 13, and I missed it. And then when I was 14, I actually made it through locals. I went to a sectional, missed it. And then from then on, like, I've made it to sectionals probably, I don't know, 8 times.
Wow.
And multiple times, I would say, yeah, I mean, I bet you I've missed by 1 or 2 shots 6 of those 8 times. So I've been very, very close. And, you know, the tough thing is you always think it's better or more than what it is, you know? And so you go to this, you think it's going to be 10 under, and then you're playing and you're at 7 under, and you're coming down the last few and you're trying to make whatever, and you end up making a bogey and you finish at 6 under, and it actually was 7 under that's in a playoff. And, you know, and just the grind of 36 holes after, especially as a tour player, most of us are coming from Mirfield. And so you played a full tournament, and then right. You have to play 36, and it's so hard to mentally stay focused for those last, it's really those last 9 to 15 holes. It's like an absolute grind.
But you did it this year.
Yeah, I did this year. It was honestly one of my more, you know, bigger moments this year that I hold on to, because I've been trying so long, and it's just fun to finally get that off my back. So now when I go qualify in future years, I don't think I'll have as much of a stigma on it of, you know, I've tried so many times, I've never made it. Now that I've made it, it's kind of off my back, and I feel like I'll make tons, and hopefully I get in world ranking wise and don't have to worry about it. But it is a grind. I mean, there's guys that don't even try to qualify because they're like, it's just not even worth going through the 36 holes and then getting your face beat in at the Open. So,
right.
Yeah, I was definitely excited that I made it this year. That's for sure.
But at the Open, I know you, during your practice round, you had an expensive hole. You made a hole in one and had to buy everybody drinks that night.
Yeah, that was actually the PGA. That was the PGA.
That was the PGA.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the PGA.
Kiowa.
Yeah, Kiowa. It was actually, it's still, I mean, granted it was a practice round, but it still go down as one of my best shots in my life. It was blowing, as everyone saw, it was blowing that whole week, 20 plus every day. And it's a thick wind. And 17 is one of the harder hole par threes we play in professional golf. And it was just great that I was with some other players. There was some media, obviously people watching, and then Colton Nose was right there. And, you know, I hit a perfect shot and everyone in the air goes, oh, it looks like Wyndham's buying drinks. And it's literally on camera, people saying that. And then it lands and it goes in. And unfortunately I had tons of witnesses and I still have people texting me saying, hey, I haven't gotten my drink yet. I need them. So fortunately I made the cut that week, so I can offset that by that. But it was definitely a pretty awesome moment.
That is cool. Now, what is something you and Boyd are working on right now in your swing? Is there any one thing you're working on, one major swing thought as you head into this week and into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know what's been nice is I played a really good stretch of golf where I was hitting it awesome. I just wasn't making putts. And we had one swing thought of I was weakening my grip a little bit, and I was trying to actually – I have a tendency of closing the face off the ball. I hit a cut, so I don't ever want my face to be shut coming into the ball. I always want it a touch open so that I can produce a cut. And so I was shutting like this. So we actually tried to get me to feel this sensation of opening it a little bit. That worked for, you know, 10, 15 weeks, and it was awesome. I was hitting it great. I get here this week, and that wasn't feeling so good. And what happened, so what we're working on currently is my right arm, because I was weakening my grip, my right arm got too high. So we're trying to actually get my right arm a little bit softer, under my left, which got me because I was hitting kind of a pull that sometimes was drawing. And when I hit a fade, that's like the worst shot you can hit. And so we got my right arm a little bit under. And then my last six holes today in my practice round, I was striping it. So
it's such a crazy game. It makes me feel better. As an amateur, to hear that you had the same thing happens to you guys. I go out one day and I figured it out. I got it. I'm going to play so good now. And then I go back to the golf course the next day and it's like, what was working that day isn't working now.
And we even have, I mean, it baffles me. I used to, when I watch golf all the time, I'm like, how do these guys ever hit it off when they have a coach watching them every single week? And I find myself now where my coach is out here a ton. And I have weeks where it's not there. And it's baffling. Like, how can I hit it so good for so long and it's so easy and then it just gets off? It's a very humbling sport. So, but it is nice when you get in that groove, when you have it, those are the fun weeks. Cause then you're not worried about golf swing. It's just, hey, let's hit it exactly what we want and let's see how low we can go.
Right. Well, good luck to you this week. Good luck in the FedEx Cup playoffs next week. We're going to talk to one of your PXG guys. I know you're a big PXG guy. And next week we've got Hudson Swafford on next week.
Yep. Great dude.
So he is too. So we'll talk some about PXG with him and get his take on the FedEx Cup playoffs. I believe he's going to make it into the second week as well. So lots of good golf to be had. And we've got Ryder Cup coming up and the fall series. And the fall series seems to be getting better fields every single year.
Yeah. No, it's – I mean, now the – well, I think what people realize is you can't skip out on the fall because if you – let's say if you only play a couple of them and you – regardless of how you play, starting in the California swing, you're so far behind.
You're playing catch-up.
You're 100%, and that's, you know, it's hard to make up 800 points in a season or whatever it is. So I definitely think guys are seeing that. You know, I think a lot of us would like more off time, but I love the fall series, and I try to take advantage of it. It helped me this year. I made I don't know, 400, 500 points in the fall. And, you know, that's so nice when you can do that. Cause then the rest of the year, it's like, all right, I can pick and choose whatever event I want, and
right.
kind of makes it more relaxed, and you can have fun trips like I did this summer and enjoy them. So
you did. So make sure you check out Wyndham on social media, on Instagram. It's at Wyndham Clark. Trust me, it's a fun follow. There's a nice mixture of golf and then good times to be had with him and his buddies. So yeah. give him a follow. Wyndham, thank you so much for your time, man. Good luck to you.
Yep. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you guys so much for listening to another edition of the Stripe Show podcast. We will see you next week.